Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good will be here to take up this morning's USDA agricultural reports. And then we'll discuss the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Along the way, we'll also check in on the agricultural energy sector. Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services out of Chicago will join us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Check us out online anytime you'd like and listen to our programs at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Tuesday, USDA report day. Corn futures up a nickel for the day at 356 and three quarters. The May at 362 and a quarter, up 4 3/4. And July at $3.68 and a quarter, up 4 3/4. December corn at 382 and three quarters for next year, up 4 1/4 cents. Soy complex, January beans, 9 3/4 higher, $8.90 and three quarters. The final trade for the day, the March at 874 and a half, up 13 1/4. May at 877 and a quarter, up 13 1/4. And July up 13 1/4 as well, 883 and a half. November beans 12 and a half higher at $8.80. 6 1/4 bean meal up $5.90 at $2.74.70. And the bean oil, 29.01, 7 cents lower. Wheat futures March contract up 12 1/4, $4.81 1/4 the trade. July, 4.92 3/4, up 11 3/4. July harvest month for the hard red at $5.25, up 18 1/4 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago down 87 1/2 cents at this hour, 131.35 the trade in the February. January at 159.42 1/2, down 2 1/2 cents. And lean hogs for the day in the February contract, $2.15 higher, up at $61.85. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. There you will find posted at this time the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture on the homepage at willag.org. You can always find those if you scroll over and look for the link to the USDA's report page.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
Here's what some of the outside markets are trading like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $30.61 are down 79 cents. They've been as low as $29.23 today for a barrel. Ethanol in the February contract at $1.32. That's 0.1 cent higher for the day. Gasoline on the RBOB, the February, at $1.08 4/6 and 4/10 cents. That's 2 8/10 cents lower. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $0.99 3/10 cents. That's right, under a dollar bill even for a gallon of heating oil or diesel fuel. It's down 2 1/10 cents. Natural gas at $2.25 8/10, 13 8/10 cents lower. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 76 points at 16,363. The U.S. dollar at 99.02. That's up 0.23. And the gold futures on the afternoon at $1,090.25 are $6 lower. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Sunny skies, a steady temperature of about 13 degrees, wind chill values of 5 below to 0. Blustery on a west-northwest wind at 17 to 22, gusting to as high as 31. Tonight, partly cloudy, will drop to a low of 7 degrees. Wind chills will be -3 to -8. West winds at 6 to 16, gusting to 22. And then tomorrow, a 20% chance of snow after 1 in the afternoon. Mostly cloudy, a high of 28 degrees. Wind chills between 3 below and 7 above. And southwest winds tomorrow at 6 to 13, gusting all the way to 17. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, will drop to just a low of 25 on a south-southwest wind.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 12th day of January. It's a Tuesday afternoon, USDA Report Day. On the line is Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
It was not much of a surprise in most of the reports this morning. However, the market reacted by moving pretty sharply higher. Which report actually pushed the market around?
Well, I think the lead one was probably the wheat dropping 2.9 million acres less than what we had last year, and that was one of the things that started everything. But, you know, basically the reports all had a little bit of positiveness to it. As we look at them, you know, we had the yield lowered a little bit in the corn. You know, we had the yield lowered a little bit in the beans, and also of production cut. The acres cut a little bit, and the production cut by 51 million. So there were some little positives and a little bit all of them, and I think the funds and the market itself was leaning so negative that we got a little better reaction than we would have had the funds not been as short as they were.
Yeah, so what we ended up with then was a wheat market that moved up well, a bit more than 18 cents in both the March and the July for the hard red. That's where most of the acreage change, if you can call that, was reported in the winter wheat seedings report. And the soft red followed suit. It was up 12 cents. Corn managed to gain a nickel. Even soybeans were up in the January, 9 3/4. The March actually gaining on that January. Is that expectations that will continue to close it? That was up 13 1/4. That will continue to close that gap between the expiring January and the March contract?
I think we'll close that gap. I think that basically along the way, the January stayed high because of the force majeure as far as the high water along the river, and people were thinking about that. But we're going to get back to where we'll have the that converge.
And what are your expectations for tonight's trade and then looking forward?
Well, I think, you know, we'll probably see a little bit of settling down, but, you know, we do have the funds that are up here, and we might see a little more liquidation. We could push this a little bit more, but all in all.
Oh, go on, Wayne.
Okay, we could push this a little bit higher, but all in all, the numbers weren't quite as bullish as maybe the reaction could be, but I think that we did sort of turn the tide a little bit today, and I think a little bit better trade tomorrow, and then I think you'll see a lot of farmers looking with some offers in at elevators.
And what is it, Wayne, that you expect farmers ought to be doing at this time then?
Well, I think, you know, look ahead and do something. We've looked at the idea of buying some puts and selling some calls above the market. If we can get a little push up here in this market tomorrow and maybe give it a little bit of room to run to the upside, but maybe put some protection here about where we're at right here on the puts.
Okay, Wayne, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us. What else should we talk about? Is there anything in the livestock?
The livestock, you know, the cattle ended up a little bit lower on the day. The hogs ended up quite a bit higher. The feeder cattle like that, this colder weather, should we generally see a little boost in the live cattle market at this point in time. But all in all, why we've got, you know, some pretty big cold storage stocks there. So, but we do think that we get some colder winter weather here, we'll see a little move up in the livestock market.
All right, Wayne, you have a good afternoon.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at WILLAG.org. Do visit there because today, right now, in fact, you'll find on the homepage, and they're always there under the USDA Reports page, but all the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture as they were released from USDA. And if you don't get a chance to listen to Darryl Good, and he's coming up in just a few minutes here, you can always go to our website and pick him up either in the Closing Market Report or in his own file there on the homepage. Again, that's all at WILLAG.org. In today's agricultural news, China's Ministry of Commerce has initiated an anti-dumping and countervailing duty investigation of U.S. distillers' dried grains with solubles, or DDGs, exported to China. The CEO of the U.S. Grains Council, Tom Slate, says he believes the allegations by the Chinese petitioners are unwarranted and unhelpful, and says they could have a negative effect on U.S. ethanol and DDG producers, as well as on the Chinese consumer, potentially over a period of many years. He goes on to say that USGS, or the U.S. Grains Council, is confident that its trading practices for DDGs, ethanol, and all coarse grains and related products out of the United States are fair throughout the world. We'll stay with China for a moment. It is expected to lower corn support prices to move stockpiles. That, according to China's deputy director of Central Rural Work Leading Group. The group is China's top decision maker when it comes to the rural policy. The group says that China could lower the corn support price mechanism this year, but if so, measures must be taken to protect farmers so that the country does not see a major drop in grain production. Further, they say China should also take measures to make sure the country's stockpile of corn will not rise further as part of its efforts to clear stocks. And finally today, let's stay with corn. With supplies at their lowest since 1992, South Africa is looking to Brazil to supply white corn, a key staple food for the country. Brazil and Argentina could become significant sources of white corn by the end of this year, according to Bloomberg. South Africa's food producers could seek as much as 2.5 million metric tons for the marketing year through 2017. Shipments that large would exceed the previous record for white corn imports of 747,000 tons set back in 1996. Brazil has already delivered 229,000 tons of yellow corn to South Africa since May. South Africa may import as much as 5 million tons of yellow and white corn in the 12 months starting in May as well. A drought in South Africa has diminished its domestic production, as the country is estimated to produce its smallest white corn crop since 1995. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. The United States Department of Agriculture has updated many reports related to the agricultural commodities grown in the Midwest, corn, soybeans, and wheat. Darrell Good, agricultural economist from the U of I, is here to take us through the numbers. The reports that were updated this morning included the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimate, Darrell, along with the grain stocks and the USDA's Crop Production Report. What did the grain stocks figure show us?
Well, the estimate of December 1 stocks came in at just a shade over 11.2 billion bushels, almost identical to the estimate a year ago. We use that number, as you indicated, to gauge how big feed and residual use of corn was during the first quarter. That number came in just about 40 million bushels smaller than apparent consumption of a year ago. And there's enough noise in those quarterly numbers that that small of a change did not really alter the USDA's forecast for the year. So they left their projection of feed and residual use at 4.3 billion bushels.
If I remember correctly, a year ago when these numbers came out, relatively similar, it was a bit more of a surprise to the marketplace because it looked like previous to 2006 usage figures as a percentage of expectations as opposed to the build-up time from 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 or thereabouts. Is that right?
Feed and residual use a year ago was a little bit on the small side. And initially the market didn't know how to interpret that because of the shift we've seen in the seasonal pattern. And once the year is over, what we found is that that seasonal pattern had shifted back to a kind of a pre-2006 program pattern. And that number turned out not to be bearish, but indicated pretty good feed use for the year.
Turn your attention to the crop production figures then, as they came out from USDA. Those numbers show that both the yield for corn and soybeans changed just slightly. Yield was down for corn from 171 last year, 169.3 this year, down to 168.5 or 168.4. And for soybeans, we went from 48.3 to 48 bushels to the acre.
Yeah, fairly small changes, as is normally the case in January. We don't expect to see big changes in the in the yield numbers, but I think directionally those numbers coming down were important, that it does point to a slightly smaller crop than previously forecast. In the case of soybeans, the USDA also lowered its estimate of harvested acreage by about 500,000 acres. So for both corn and soybeans, compared to the November forecast, production dropped about 50 million bushels for those crops.
And how did all this translate into the world agricultural supply and demand estimate ending stocks?
In the case of both corn and soybeans, a part of the reduction in the production forecast was offset by a smaller projection of exports. So for corn, the projection of year-ending stocks actually increased 17 million bushels. And for soybeans, we dropped about 25 million bushels from the December forecast. So tightened up the year-ending stocks projection for soybeans, left the corn at a pretty ample supply.
Anything that producers need to take away from it in the way of marketing?
You know, I think there's not a lot of information in this report, not a lot of new information. It confirms a lot of things. It confirms that we have an ample supply of both corn and soybeans, and now the focus will turn to the South American crop, how well that turns out. And then in a couple months, we'll start looking at acreage plans here in the U.S. and what kind of growing season we might expect. But I don't think this set of reports really change the near-term outlook for either crop.
On that note, the acreage report, winter wheat seedings report was out. It was a bit surprising.
It was a bit surprising. We did see a 2.7 million acre reduction in winter wheat seedings, and most of that's hard red winter wheat. Looks like soft red winter wheat may be up just a bit from last year. And I think the market is going to have some debate about what that means, whether producers are shifting acreage to other crops this year, or whether the generally low prices of commodities might mean an overall reduction in crop acreage in 2016. And that puts some, I think, renewed importance on the March planting intentions report. We'll see what producers are thinking about spring planted crops.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Darrell Good, agricultural economist from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's check in now on the agricultural energy sector. Stephen Platt joins us. He's traveling across greater suburban Chicago on the train at this time. That's kind of an unusual thing for us to catch up with somebody on the train, but you're out commuting this afternoon. Hope your commute is going well, Stephen.
Oh, sure is. Snowy out there.
Snowy and cold, same as it is here. One of the things you could be doing is driving a car, because the price of crude oil and gasoline has really dropped. I'm wondering what you think about crude that managed to break into the $20 a barrel mark today.
Well, certainly my feeling at and we haven't been on the show for close to 2 months, or just over 2 months, was that we try to hold against that $40 mark. At this juncture, and we've fallen well through that, reaching down under 30, I felt the Saudis would actually cave in before now, and they have done. And I underestimated, I think, the impact and the sincerity of the Saudis to maintain their production at such a high level, despite some of the pressures that they have from a budget standpoint. Instead, I think political considerations have actually taken precedent, particularly with Iran and also maybe even Russia in terms of Syria, and also the lifting of sanctions and the most recent sectarian strife between Iran and Saudi Arabia, which has been in evidence. So the Saudis are certainly committed to maintaining production and also maintaining a low-price environment that is putting pressure on their major adversaries. I think that will continue to contribute to a low-price environment, which we've seen for gasoline, heating oil, And it also has fed into even the natural gas market to some extent, particularly due to the weather earlier in the year.
It appeared that to begin with, a push towards lower prices was aimed at making sure that production in the United States would not continue to evolve. That seems to have happened, and now you're telling me they're working on other adversaries. Are there political ramifications if we stay this low for very much longer?
Well, there certainly are going to be certainly an impact on U.S. production levels. A lot of it coming off of some of the massive debt many of the corporations that have engaged in some pretty expansive exploratory projects here over the past year and past few years. And that's taken on a lot of debt, and I think at some point you will see the scale of bankruptcies actually increase. And that will be a sign that we probably have actually hit some sort of bottom. In terms of an international stage, Saudi's IPO, in which they're considering selling a piece of Saudi Aramco, I think is a symptom that they are looking at trying to raise funds in order to maintain their current policy. And that, I think, is more on an international scale in terms of other adversaries.
So in that case, with you would think that lower crude oil prices would make the IPO not as enticing. Am I reading that wrong, apparently, then?
Well, they certainly are able to maintain a lower price environment longer than they would have by raising those funds through that IPO.
Oh.
And I think that certainly is something that we're probably still trying to grapple with as it possibly develops.
Anything else that we should discuss before I let you go and you get along?
Well,
with your
certainly we have to, you know, be cautious here, but certainly the prices are going to encourage some adjustments on the production side and also the demand side. Certainly is going to be pretty impressive as we move through 2016. You are going to see the surplus actually probably drop by half that we're noting, and probably in 2017 start to look at a more balanced situation.
So there is some light at the end of the tunnel, meaning that these very low prices will go away eventually.
What they certainly do, they cheer for low prices, as we all know, or cheer for low prices is low prices, and that does force the adjustments to take place.
Hey, thanks so much, and have a safe travel across to Chicago.
I appreciate it, and you have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Stephen Platt. He's with Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this 12th day of January. When we come back, we'll take a deeper look at the weather forecast with Don Day. He's out of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don't forget, you can pick up all of our agricultural programming, including the weather forecast, on our website. The address is willag.org. All posted there not long after it airs on our radio station, sometimes, as is the case with Commodity Week, before it ever airs on our radio stations. Again, the address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, we'll take a little break for our commercial affiliates, and you'll hear This Day in Ag History from Dave Dickey.
Support comes from Country Financial, now through March hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois. Topics include updates to both the federal crop insurance program and the Farm Bill. And at most locations, how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
It's National Marzipan Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1737, John Hancock was born. Perhaps best known for his bold signature on the Declaration of Independence, he was also sought out during the Revolution as governor of the colony of Massachusetts to raise funds for beef cattle to feed the hungry army. a task which proved difficult to achieve. At one point, Commander-in-Chief of the Army George Washington warned Hancock that if beef was not forthcoming, the Army could not be expected to maintain garrisons below West Point, New York. In 1885, John Bloomfield Jarvis died. A civil engineer, he designed and built the Boston Aqueduct. He also made contributions in construction of canals, railroads, and other water supply systems for the growing U.S. In 1887, Wilhelm Hofmeister died. A German-born botanist, his investigations of plant structure led to the discovery of the regular alternation of sexual and asexual generations in plants. And in 1899, Paul Hermann Müller was born. A Swiss chemist, he discovered that DDT was a potent insecticide. It was the most widely used insecticide for more than 20 years and helped to increase food production around the world, due mainly to its accumulation in animals that eat insects and its toxic effects on them and those further up the food chain, and has been banned in the U.S. since 1972. However, its residue was still found in some foods grown in the U.S. as late as 2002. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media on a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day joins us as usual to take a look at the weather forecast. Don, let's begin in South America. They have had some rainfall, and it's been pretty widespread across Brazil. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it certainly has. They've had a weather pattern change here over the past week that was really nice to see. They had some warm, dry weather conditions, and things were getting a little bit dry, and the rain's pretty timely. And the outlook for especially the growing areas of Brazil is still looking pretty wet. It looks like an active pattern for all the key growing areas of Brazil with more rain coming, as well as some of the key areas of Argentina. They're also likely to get into some of the precipitation here in the next week. Temperatures, Brazil and all that rain, as you'd expect, when it's wet, it tends to be a little cooler than normal, and that would be the case as well.
Oh, good for the crop, probably, because it was not only dry, but it was really hot for a few days, more than a few days, in the middle of the last month, the beginning of this month. So hopefully they'll have some better times there. Here in the United States, we're watching winter weather across the Midwest. It's cold, and there's been a little ice, a little bit of snow. What can you tell me about the places which will receive the most problematic?
Well, we're definitely have shifted gears from where we were for most of December with the colder weather now finally arriving into the Great Lakes, the Midwest, and the East. It's going to continue to be cold. Going forward here for the next week or two, we're going to continue to have opportunities for Canadian air to slip on in. Lake effect snows moving through some portions of the Midwest and Great Lakes, and that'll be something to watch over the next coming days. We're also going to see some penetration of some of that colder air all the way into the southeast United States. Places that have been very warm this winter, like Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, and even Florida, headed towards much colder temperatures. Now, there is ice and snow coming for the Midwest and the East over the next week or two. While we may not have one particular storm in our sights yet, we have all the right ingredients for winter storm conditions developing during that time frame.
And I know you've broadly been watching El Nino. Is it beginning to wane yet at all?
Well, the El Nino itself, the warmer water temperatures in the subtropic Pacific are beginning to trend downward, where those temperatures have peaked. However, there's always a lag. And the lag, that extra heat and moisture in the atmosphere, will continue to bring very good chances for more precipitation to the far west and the desert states over the coming weeks and really over the next 3 or 4 months. So while El Nino itself is weakening, already last week we had anywhere from 3 to over 10 inches of waterfall in portions of California, and the prospects for more rain in drought-stricken western areas looks pretty good in the coming weeks and months.
Thank you so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. A quick reminder that I'll be traveling tomorrow to Woodstock, Illinois, for the Organic Grains Transition Conference. This is a conference set up for those who would like to begin the process of producing maybe a few acres of grains organically. I'll be reporting, of course, tomorrow afternoon on that conference, and you can expect to see things up on our website, too, at willag.org. Until next time, I'm Todd Gleason.